Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and a very warm welcome back. Gosh, it's been too long. It's Blighty Day Fiancé. My name is Michelle, and my co-host with me today is my bestie and yours, the renowned columnist, political analyst, broadcaster, writer extraordinaire, who was just finishing up a column on the war in Gaza, and is now making a hard left turn into the reality TV arts and sciences, for which we are very grateful. Say hello, Mr. Elliot Wilson.
Hello, hello. Yes, I've put away the sort of simple matters for today, and now it's down to really deep, difficult interpersonal relationships and conflict, I think it's fair to say.
Now, for those of you who are joining us for the first time or who haven't listened in a while, Elliot and I did a series on Patreon called Royalty, which we are bringing back in some way, shape, or form. So you have that to look forward to. There will be a smattering of that on the Patreon, depending on what the folks in the Prince Louis tier decide. Our Patreon is back up and open. Just as housekeeping, for $5 a month, you will continue to get ad-free episodes, plus a few little extras sprinkled in here and there. You will also get, so that's the main show, which as of now is 90 Day Fiancé Original Recipe, hosted by myself and my husband, him and Doors, my soulmate, light of my life, Robin. And that's at the Prince George tier. The Princess Charlotte tier, you get all of the original things from the Prince George tier, plus you get a weekly bonus episode, which is dictated by royal edict from the Prince Louis tier, which is $15 a month, where you get to decide what the bonus episode of each week is. So yeah, go on, check it out. You can try the higher tiers, I think, for free for a week and see if you like it, dip your toe in. That is all the housekeeping that's fit to print. But in the meanwhile, Elliot and I will be covering royal events here and there, whether it's the whisper kind that it hasn't reached the surface of the press, or whether it's the, and I wish I wasn't making this up, the app that you can get to be informed of His Majesty's cancer journey. beat by beat.
It's an extraordinary thing, isn't it? I thought, by the way, as we're here, I might just share one thing which I shared with you a couple of days ago, it being the 100th anniversary of the British Empire exhibition, which was held at Wembley in 1924, which was an opportunity for then parts of the empire, particularly the dominions, to send exhibits to the imperial capital in London to display their wares. And I was reading recently that Canada, which was then the Dominion of Canada, donated to this jamboree a life-size statue of the then Prince of Wales, later Edward VIII, of whom we have treated greatly, made of butter. A life-size statue of the Prince of Wales made of butter. Now, how that transported from Canada, I don't know. Maybe it was made on site by some artisan Canadian exile in London, but I thought that was an extraordinary way to celebrate the what really binds the empire together and keeps, you know, the English-speaking races, well, I suppose, greased and buttered up. But, yeah, I thought that was quite an extraordinary thing for the Canadians to have done, and we thank them for it still 100 years later, so... God bless you, Canada.
Yes, that is magnificent. I imagine that they weren't told that as part of the deal, they wouldn't be taking any of those things back that they sent over.
One would hope. I mean, we perhaps should have tried to swap the actual Prince of Wales and kept the butter one. I don't know, but...
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, he's very quiet, isn't he? He's gone a bit yellow, but he's very quiet. We like the quiet. Quiet is good.
I think brain power-wise, no one would have noticed.
God, no. Improvement, I think, probably. All those cow enzymes.
Yeah. Socially, too, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked about this before, but man, that family, I don't know. I don't think one could say their sense of humor is... in any way universal or
no,
was.
I think that's fair, no.
Well, I mean, we've talked about that before.
Yeah, I mean, George V famously said, I think the same exhibition, he was in front of a painting by Chagall, I think, somebody like that, and the Queen Mary, his wife, heard him shout, May, come over here, this will make you laugh. And you think, yeah, that's a Chagall, Your Majesty, don't worry about it. You know.
Well... little did anyone notice that Queen Mary's dress was a banging and a clanging, and it's lucky that they didn't frisk anybody on the way out, because there is no way Queen Klepto didn't leave that exhibition with more than what she came in with.
It's as well she was entitled to the crown jewels, really. Otherwise, they'd have been away under the skirt for sure.
Oh, Lord, I have missed this. I have missed you terribly. You've been such a good friend in these difficult times. And I'm the kind of person, y'all, if you haven't figured it out, I'm the kind of person where, like, when I'm in the lowest of my lows, I need people in my life to kind of check in. If you have people in your life who need checking in on, today's a good reminder to do that. And I'm the same for Elliot. We're always in each other's lives, whether, you know, that's meeting in person or not, or just sending messages or weird political memes that I have to Google to understand. But anyway, we are here to talk about the latest episode of 90 Day, The Single Life. So we won't go beat for beat, but I've written a few moments that I think are worth putting in here. Who would you like to start with as a couple?
Well, there are so many. I think in some ways the simplest, perhaps, and I don't mean that in terms of brain power necessarily. I think Chantel and Yanis, possibly.
Yes.
I don't know.
So, I don't know if this is in any official dating guidance or manual or pamphlet. Insulting the local cuisine and making disgusted faces while you're not even really giving it a fair shake. And I'm saying this as somebody with, look, Elliot and I are both neurodiverse folk. We have textures that we don't like and textures that we can't stand. For Elliot, it's food-wise, it's anything that's green. You know, that might be genetic down to his Scottishness as well. Who knows? But the point is, there's a polite way to pretend to eat something that you don't like. And this wasn't it.
It really wasn't. I mean, you know, let me be quite clear about my position. Snails are disgusting. Why anybody would want to eat them is utterly beyond me. I have eaten them. They're essentially like pieces of... they're sort of like chewing gum fried in garlic butter, which essentially gives them all of the flavor of chewing gum and all of the delicious, healthy consistency of garlic butter. So they are disgusting, and I felt to a degree sorry for Chantelle that she arrives at a festival and clearly had not grasped that snails were not just a kind of option at this festival, but really the kind of theme, the overwhelming dominant strain of this festival was snails. So unfortunate for her. But yeah, there are ways of saying that's unfortunate. This is not a type of food I like. I'll have to make the best of it. And there is doing the sort of those sort of memes of cats retching that you get on Instagram, which is essentially what she was doing when presented with these things. And I think if you're a host in someone's country, particularly if said person is somebody that you're hoping to bang on a more or less regular basis, then it might be advisable to exercise a bit of diplomacy. But that doesn't seem to be massively in her toolkit.
No, I mean, this is a man who has shared with her how proud he is of his country, how much he loves being there, how close he is with his family, how proud he is of his cultural traditions. And, you know, she has taken interest in absolutely none of it. So I'm not entirely surprised. Apparently she wants to be paraded around like a golden fleece of some kind. She wants a level of intimacy that is entirely unearned.
I think that's fair.
And that disturbs me. But I'm convinced that she was replaced by a robot a long time ago, because I have never... Y'all, I have been to some terrible plays, showcases, staged readings, acting classes, improv classes, you name it. I have never seen a delivery this robotic and bereft, notably bereft of any human reaction in my life. I don't even know how to explain it, but it immediately gives me the ick.
And she also has this weird sort of intellectual framework, if I can put it that way, which is roughly that of a 16-year-old girl, which is that you go on holiday and find someone who's really fit. And you think, well, sure, fine. I mean, I didn't, obviously, because you don't if you go in places I go on holiday to. But that's not going to be, in general, the love of your life, is my submission to the court, my lord. You don't hear very often people using the phrase, that's funny, my husband and I also met on a Greek island when he was a footballer and I was an American tourist. It's just not a particularly common trope.
You do hear it now and then of like, oh, we met and we got married like 3 days later and everything was great. But no, not often. And this is for somebody who claims to be excited about travel, the aspects of travel that she's interested in have nothing to do with expanding her worldview at all.
No.
Like to a shocking degree. Anything else on them before we move on?
Just that, you know, her excitement about travel appears to depend on whether people will have their shirts off and where the mercury will be. And that's fine. You know, if that's what you want, you know, I have friends who would go on holiday around halfway around the world for that. But it doesn't
right,
bespeak.
Right, but she doesn't.
It doesn't bespeak a sort of insatiable appetite for cultural expansion.
No. But she's also, what she ought to be doing there, in my humble opinion, as someone who was divorced, what she ought to be doing there is having a vacation fling, you know?
Absolutely. And
it's a wasted opportunity. She should be with a different guy every night.
Yeah, and don't pretend that one thing is the other. That's the thing. Be clear about your taxonomy and your categorization. Don't look at the first footballer who walks past and think, oh,
no,
he looks nice. Perhaps we'll be together forever. Yeah, perhaps you
will. I don't think this bodes very well for her because she's looking for, there are two things that are incompatible. So, Robin and I have spoken about this before. I think the key to why we were able to, you know, bond and kind of fall in love so quickly was because we were both the versions of ourselves that we were before we became, you know, kind of molded around what our ex-partners needed. And Chantal is not only not yet in a stage where, because she married her ex very young, but there's all these competing interests that can't be resolved altogether, because there's this wanting to be free and discovering who you are, which does not go well with finding a life partner, settling down and having children. There's the part of her that desperately wants children yesterday, which doesn't fit in with the finding herself and her place in the world and knowing what she wants to do and what she needs in a relationship, right? And there's the part of her that just needs a fucking vacation where she doesn't have to calculate every step. And none of these, oh God, I'm sorry. It's a very thin veneer, I know, but I don't care for her. I never have, and I never will.
She's not enormously sympathetic, I don't think. And, from the earlier episodes, it did seem as if it was being framed as that kind of vacation. You know, her shrieking friends that she came on holiday with seemed exactly the sort of people you would go on holiday with for that kind of purpose. And that's fine. You know, Greece is a long way from where I am, so that's good. But it now seems to be turning into some kind of, Tristan und Isolde romantic quest, or, you know, some search for the Holy Grail. And you think that's not what this is about at all.
No, it isn't.
But, you know, good luck to her. Maybe she will find a way of engaging with Giannis, which doesn't involve snails. Not a euphemism, by the way.
Doubtful. So on to somebody who I would argue, and I think wouldn't get much pushback for saying, is really the MVP of this series, which is John.
John, extraordinary man.
John is understandably annoyed that Patrick and Thais, his brother and sister-in-law, just dropped him in it with Megan. Now, he is the only cast member ever to go on this show with his priorities straight and with a healthy approach. There are lots of things, and these aren't like, you know, deficits of Megan's or anything like this, but committing to being a step parent, a co-parent of a child with special needs or any child, but particularly a child with special needs, is a massive commitment. And instead of selling her a version of the future, which might never happen, he's saying, let's make sure this is right before I move in, before we build a life together, before we disrupt this poor child's life, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And Megan is, in my opinion, disturbingly keen to fast track that process, which is not something I can understand or relate to.
No, I mean, I have a basic degree of sympathy for her in that, you know, raising a child on your own is presumably very difficult anyway. If that child has additional needs, that must
but
be even
co-parenting.
More
parenting. She does have a dad.
Indeed.
Sorry to interrupt you.
But no, yeah. Absolutely. But, you know, she obviously has to do a lot of work simply to be a parent, and all parents do. Parenting is, from what I understand, really quite hard. But she seems, therefore, to think, right, well, this is a way to make my life easier, but also to make my life better and all of that kind of stuff. And John seems to me to have this wonderfully refreshing attitude of being utterly honest about who he is, what he does, and what he wants to do. But it means he's slightly baffled when people sort of come up to him and say, oh, you actually did mean that you, for example, live out of a suitcase. And he's, well, like, yeah, I said I did. I said my suitcase was my dresser. It's my dresser. What part of it did you not understand? And I feel a great deal of empathy for him in that way. And that, you know, he obviously thinks, well, if you're just completely straight with people, you won't get into any difficulties. And yet people are looking at him and thinking, yeah, but what does he really mean? He's thinking, no, there is no what do I really mean. There's what I've said and what happens. And yet
exactly.
There is all of this oddness building up around him, and he seems occasionally a bit frustrated, which I get totally.
I appreciate him drawing a line and creating a boundary and saying, I will not accept an ultimatum. I'm not going to accept. I don't know what I think when he says timeline, he means deadline, because I think a timeline is a fair thing to work out or to, you know, talk about.
Yeah.
But deadlines and ultimatums, no, absolutely not. And I think this is a man who I truly believe has done a lot of work on himself. I think, you know, of course, there's the standard amount of, like, yeah, he may have had a delayed adolescence, but he had a terrible childhood, a very difficult childhood, you know? His mother was, well, it's not entirely worth going into, but he's come out of it, as you say, with this really refreshing approach to relationships, where he's not going to pretend to be someone he's not. He's not going to future fake. He's not going to promise the earth and then under deliver, you know? And he's also extending that to having boundaries about how he's going to be treated in a relationship. And I just think, I wish everybody could take his advice, because he's incredible in how he conducts relationships, in my opinion. Now, I think that there has to be a little bit of give and take here. There has to be a little compromise. Megan has to think clearly about what he's asking for, which is all reasonable, in my opinion. It's a lot to move in with someone. It's totally different than dating someone and not living with them. There are adjustments to be made, and you need time to make those adjustments. You need time to, you know, figure out what his work trajectory is going to be. Anyway, there's any number of things. They've both said it all. I think we're in accord there.
I think the other thing is that, you know, obviously they were talking recently about whether he wants any more children. He was saying, no, he doesn't. And she was saying, so
right.
that's completely off. And you think, well, look, that's one of the very few things about which is absolutely incontrovertibly better to be certain than to try to fudge the issue and say, well, maybe, or no, we'll talk about it. No, don't talk about it later. If you are convinced, and not everyone is, but if you have a certain position, for God's sake, say now, because otherwise it's avoiding a horrible conversation because you think there might be an argument, and that's not a good idea. And, you know, And it may be a deal breaker or it may not, but at least be aware of it then and there, and you can make that decision as opposed to thinking, well, maybe he'll change his mind. Because the thing is, if he did change his mind, is it really for the right reason? Do you want somebody who's going to have a child with you because not having a child is more difficult? I mean, it's just horrendous.
And also, he's allowed to change his mind. He's an adult. I have very little patience for people in general. And you and I have talked about this ad infinitum. People who, and I think this is restricted to people who have no curiosity about the world. People who are just completely averse to nuance in any conversation and any possibility. Like, there can't be a good person who has done a bad thing. There can't be a bad person who can be reformed. You can't make a decision later in life that you thought you might not make. The opportunity may never arise. I think it's naive.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Speaking of naive, I'm very much over the way that Jamal talks to Veronica.
Yeah, she is going to do him physical violence at some point. And to be honest, I'm going to stand back and watch it because I appreciate there's an age gap. Can't remember how big it is. It's like 10 years or something. And obviously, because she's only late 30s, he's therefore considerably younger. But no, you just to the performance in the last episode of, you know, well, you can't raise your voice. You don't get to make rules like that. And you certainly don't get to express them in that sanctimonious kind of, well, I'm just saying kind of way, without a degree of pushback, which I think she gave. He clearly doesn't like being challenged. That's the basic problem.
Because he never has been. He's an only child and he's, you know, raised by a single mother who is, I think it's fair to say, occasionally on the delusional side of the bridge between reality and complete imagination. He sort of hits these talking points over and over again, one of which I take huge umbrage with, which is he constantly diminishes Veronica or Tim's role in Veronica's life because they are a family. That's not the biological father of her child, but that's the child's parent. And that's that's the man she raised her child with. And to diminish that in any way, and I'm particularly sensitive to this as a stepmom, I think is unforgivable. I mean, I wouldn't have seen him again after that because it's not about, sorry, go ahead.
No, I think, you know, his line in the most recent episode about, you know, he's some guy you used to have sex with. Well, no, that's not really what it's about, is it? As you will understand when you grow up, if you ever do, and if you get to anything like maturity without somebody having killed you, then you will grasp that there are all sorts of relationships, and most of them leave a trail behind them of one form or another. And, you know, initially I had some sympathy with his point that she involves Tim in her non-parenting life in a way which is unusual.
Sure. Yeah.
And I say unusual in a perfectly neutral way, because if that works for them, fine. I mean, I have my issues with Tim. I think he's quite a weird guy, but we may or may not come back to that. But that is the decision she's made. That's the kind of life she lives. And provided she's willing to recognize, and I think she said more or less in terms, it's a bit odd. She knows that. She knows it's not how everybody interacts with their ex. So he had some scope to say, look, just saying, this is a bit odd. I find it difficult, but I'm going to take a little bit of time to adjust to it. And maybe, you know, we both need to find different ways of accommodating the issue. But instead,
absolutely,
it's just kind of...
And he also has the right to challenge her on where those boundaries lie. Right?
Absolutely.
What he has no right to do and no place commenting on is Tim as a parent to Veronica's child and their co-parenting relationship. That's where the line is.
Yeah. I mean, and it's rarely a good idea to comment on anyone's parenting, whether they're the best parent in the world or the worst. But particularly if you're a kind of interested onlooker, but you're not fully involved yourself, and it is at least in part people about whom you profess to care, then I think it's really a matter of least said, soonest mended. But that's clearly not a particular philosophy of life that he adopts very readily.
It's not the move for that generation, I dare say. No offense to listeners of that generation. I think you're probably much more astute and emotionally intelligent than Jamal is, but then so is my French bulldog. Let's talk about Ruben the Cuban and Miss Debbie.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there, isn't there? There really is.
The funny, I like screamed out loud when they're in whatever that car is, that it does look like a race car. I can't say that I've seen one of those. I don't know if that's up to code. I don't know if you can legally drive those.
It looked a bit like an Aerial Atom, which is a very sort of stripped down sort of lightweight thing, but I don't know. But yeah, I've seen the kind, and you think, okay, it must be enormous fun to drive. I can see that. But as with any car, and I say this may be a kind of spear rather than distaff issue for listeners, and I understand that, but any car you drive is giving an impression to the outside world. It can be a relatively soft, gentle, discreet impression, or it can be shouting a message from the rooftops. Now, Ruben's car is shouting a message from the rooftops, and I'm not saying necessarily that the message it's shouting is a particularly good one, or one which says enormously flattering things about the size of his genitals, is all I'm saying. But you know, that's his choice. He's made his tiny car, and now he's sitting in it. And Debbie seems to enjoy his tiny car. Let's hope that bodes well for her enjoyment of other tiny things. I don't know. But yeah, it's. They're an odd pair. They're an odd pair because they're odd in their separate ways, and they're odd together, which is the kind of trifecta of oddness. And then, of course, you know, you whack his parents into the mix, and it's even more oddness. So, yeah.
Well, his poor parents. On the other hand, it is good training for later on in their relationship. Oh, yeah, so maybe he's just getting a head start. And that's, I'm being serious there.
Yeah, the fact that he can look after elderly people is going to stand him in good stead if he makes it work. But his poor dad just looks slightly bemused by the whole thing. It's like, I'm trying to watch television and who's this woman? I don't understand.
I think it's more, who's this woman? What are these cameras in my house? My wife is in the hospital, that kind of thing. And I bet you his parents have been together for like 50 years. So it's got to be tough. Here's my question. And you know that Central London, certain areas in particular, are lousy with... Now, y'all, if you've not been to Central London, you rarely get above 10 miles per hour. It's basically a constant stop and start, unless you're in a taxi in which you're moving marginally faster. But you can't, like, race around Central London. But imagine... Just take this journey with me. Imagine you're in Ruben's car and you go past the National Portrait Gallery. You throw your arms up in exultation and go, "Woo! Art!" Like, I love art, and I want to create art and serve the muse for as long as there is breath in my body and blood in my flesh. But even I can't conceive of my reaction to anything being, "Woo! Art!"
No, I mean, I've been past the British Library in a number of different conveyances over the years. And never, and you know, I'm what, 46 now, so you know, I've had a lot of time to do this. I've never shouted "woo" books at any kind of volume, whether it be on a bus, in a taxi, in a car, walking, in
Have
a rickshaw.
Have you thought it in your mind, though?
I've not even thought it. I occasionally think I must renew my membership. I've occasionally thought it's really not a very pretty building, but at least it's better than the old one. It works and all that kind of stuff. But I've never been so overwhelmed by the concept of the printed word that it's just forced its way out of my lungs in sheer exultation. But maybe I'm just not expressive enough for this modern demonstrative world. Maybe I'm too old fashioned. Maybe I need to release my inner Miss Debbie, though that is a truly, truly horrible thought.
I don't know. I think we can all take something for her. I mean, she certainly has life and youth and exuberance in her. And I think she really does. I admire how much of herself she's willing to express and put out there. Now, look, it doesn't always come out in the best ways, but she's unapologetic in her life philosophy, and I appreciate that. I think she's got it right. I think she has it within her. You know, she can't help but express herself. She wants to help others through art. She loves animals. I don't have a lot of complaints there.
I have no doubts that she is the sort of person whom some people will find absolutely addictive company, who will spend, you know, half an hour with her and say, "My God, she's so life affirming. I, you know, it always perks up my day, week, month, whatever, when I spend it." And I get that totally. I just have the sense that I would find her hard work after about 10 seconds, but that's just a personality issue. It's a matter of how we approach the world.
She's entirely sincere.
I
think you are slightly triggered by her similarities to a certain family member of yours.
There may be some issues there. There is an expressiveness and an unwillingness to hold back. Ebullience, yes. A joie de vivre, which is almost French nuclear test in the Pacific in its intensity. but I, there are just, you can't imagine thinking, should we just go for a quiet drink, Debs? Like, just quick one, you know, quick pint. Because she'll have married the barman. She'll be performing some kind of voodoo wedding with, you know, two of the customers, and will then have invited, you know, a family from, you know, Malaysia to come and stay with her, and it'll all be fine and it's great. And you'll think, I'm just exhausted. I don't know where to start. And that is a purely a personality thing. I don't judge her as a bad person at all. I mean, there are some unpleasant people in these reality shows, and she's very far from one of them. I just see why some people would find her wearing.
I get that. I also think you're projecting, but that's okay. We need to have that family member of yours on the podcast, though, because I think she'd be a riot.
I'm always open to offers, I'm sure.
So let's, now this is the root of the root and the butt of the butt, isn't it? It's Nat and Natalie and Josh. I think she's hit on some universal truths here. She says, it took me a year and a half to realize that you don't want me. What was your impression of this sort of denouement, which I think has been a long time coming?
It does seem to have been a long time coming. I mean, it's odd, because if you treat it very superficially, you can see the whole thing as a kind of slightly stereotypical, slightly sort of pat morality thing. I mean, she's the kind of very over the top, very enthusiastic but broken English, slightly skullduggery ridden sort of Eastern European, who is wanting to pursue a spurious acting career and all that kind of stuff. And I think it's very easy to frame it like that, but I don't think that's what's going on, at least in its entirety. I see the weirdness of her mum sort of lurking in the background, and this was maybe a reference that only British listeners will get, but she kept reminding me of the mother of the Cheeky Girls, who were a pair of Romanian ladies who had a brief but extraordinary and to me inexplicable pop career in about, oh, I guess the early 2000s, who had no discernible talent except an apparent lack of shame, which will stand you in very good stead in this modern world. But they had this slightly Svengali-esque, very formidable-looking mother who would lurk in the background and clearly was calling the shots in a sort of Lady Macbeth kind of way. And the mum here is giving me very similar vibes, as well as the... I mean, it's hard to see what Natalie's mother thinks about the world, but she's not an innocent. She's not naive. I think she has very clear ideas about the world. She clearly liked Natalie's previous partner or husband a great deal.
And he her.
But I don't know. There were flashes, particularly in the recent episodes, where I looked at Natalie and thought, you know, you've clearly had a life of extremes and of commitments that maybe were made too hastily or whatever, but you're also desperately searching for some kind of, whether it's security financially or emotional security, and you're again and again not finding it, and it looks like it's wearing you down. I felt very sorry for her towards the end of the most recent episode. Now, I know the kind of weeping on the curbside may have been slightly performative, and there was a lot of weirdness.
Oh, I don't think it is performative. I think that's...
In which case, even more heartbreaking. But, I mean, you know, the dinner party they had recently where she burst into this long, weird Ukrainian language Shakespeare performance, and one of the guests quite brilliantly said afterwards, well, you know, we weren't expecting that. And I'm thinking, well, no, you wouldn't be. I mean, I've been to some weird dinner parties, but I've never been to a dinner party where I've thought, well, I expect what will happen is that somebody will do an impromptu performance of Shakespeare in Ukrainian. That's probably on the agenda. So, yeah, I think that would be very odd. And I got the caution that Josh's friends were trying to
instill in him. But I think it was being put across in a way which could not help but come across badly in the sense of this woman's a gold digger, she's out to use you, and nobody ever wants to hear that from their friends, because why would you?
You know what I was thinking was edited out of that conversation was they probably said, you have to stop writing these off as business expenses, because our business cannot take on the liability of her apartment rental and her car and all of these like, forget it. I don't think that it's interesting, because to somebody who isn't Natalie, I would say, you knew who this man has been telling you who he is from the very beginning, from the very first series of broken promises, you know? And I happen to be in agreement that not picking up the elderly mother from the airport is kind of, you know, that's really telling somebody where you are, where you place in their line of priority, you know? And I think that's a really shitty and rude and horrible thing to do. What makes me sad is that instead of learning from any of her past relationships, and this is not a judgment, it's just a statement of fact, Natalie has been on her third divorce. And she talks about what she gave to these men, and I don't doubt that in her mind, she did give everything. But she also took a lot. And I think a lot of that taking comes from not being absolutely clear and upfront and honest about what her expectations were from the beginning. I can't speak to Ukrainian culture and what those expectations are and how much is traditionally shared and what those, I can't speak to that. But she had an American man who, you know, I think was probably clinically depressed for a good amount of time that they were together. All of this is encapsulated in one sentence. She says, I need to be with someone who will heal me. You need to heal yourself, Natalie. And I'm not talking about, I mean, you need to go to therapy and understand what it is, what you want. And then you can think about how to go about getting it instead of doing this thing that you've been, I think, conditioned to do by your mother, which is to find a man who will have a child with you. And now I'm worried that she's going to have this child that she co-parents with her mother, which is fine. Lots of people do that. But this kid does not deserve to be the answer to all of her problems. And it doesn't deserve that burden.
I think you're right. And I think, I mean, there are clues that seem to me bizarre that she either didn't pick up or ignored. I mean, if I'd moved to someone else's country and was going out with them and in 18 months had not seen their house, I'd be asking questions. My first question would be, where's your fucking house and why haven't I seen it? Sorry, that's two questions. But
I mean, Robin and I have a theory that, especially because of the industry that he works in, and this is all alleged by me. I have no proof of this. It's a thought exercise, if you like. I have no basis for this. But given that he runs some kind of modeling agency or training agency, I think he goes to parts of the Midwest, becomes involved with, you know, 18, 19-year-old young ladies hoping for a big break in the same way that Natalie was. And I don't think he brings any of them. I don't think he brings Natalie home because he doesn't necessarily want her to meet Candy and Sydney and Randy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Who are all crashing there.
Yeah, you think there's a kind of diamonds are forever, I'm Bambi and I'm Thumper thing going on. Yeah, it's all quite disgusting.
I think
yeah.
I think he has very low self-esteem. I think he's attracted to women who are needy because he thinks that the only leverage he can get and the only way that he can attract a woman is to offer her something. That all these, because these relationships are all transactional, even with his ex-partners, the mothers of his children, it's like, oh yeah, I pay for her to do this, blah, blah, blah. It's, I don't know. I'm glad we had a break from Tyrae, because that just feels like circling a particularly unpleasant drain.
It's just, it's never going to end well, is it? I mean, I can't remember how far actually into what most people would understand as a relationship they got, but the woman he met a few episodes ago, who clearly had her own, emotional turmoil, who I think was serving in the military, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm.
And they both seemed like people who were desperately looking for something to help their lives improve and had identified, correctly or not, probably incorrectly, that each other was that thing, but had banded together out of a kind of, oh my God, let us, you know, go through this current iteration of hell, at least together rather than separately. But I mean, when he approached that table of women a few episodes ago and kicked off with the icebreaker that he'd had a 4-year relationship with a woman who turned out to be a man, you're thinking,
oh
mate, that is like episode 4 or 5. That's not what you leave with on the pilot. It's really
no.
Because it bears a lot of questioning and it carries a lot of, can I just take you back one step from there? And, you know, honesty is good. Radical honesty, I start to worry about, because I start to worry about its motivation. And clearly you can't conceal these things.
There's trauma dumping, isn't there?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, get out of my way. I will tell you all the bad things that have happened to me, because then at least I'm done. And then you can deal with it. And you think, no, I'd rather not.
Or you do agree to it because you think, okay, that's manageable. But what they've left out is way more than you're willing to bargain with. What they've left out is the shellfish they have inserted into your sofa cushions. But that's another story for another day.
I mean, you would hope that if somebody tells you that they'd had a years-long relationship with somebody who was not of the sex that they pretended to be, that would be the headline. You know, you would hope that they weren't burying the lead. But if that turns out not to be the case, then there's a whole other world, because you just thought, okay, well, I've got over that massive elephant in the room, to use Atlee's term. Let's just hope there aren't, like, a couple of mammoths hiding behind the Japanese print screen. I mean, it's just, people are really weird.
And we're
weird.
Talking about secrets, not humans, just to be very clear.
Very clear, yes. Elephants in the room are not analogous to any people involved. I'm merely using it as a term for things which one does not acknowledge, but which turn out to be of considerable importance.
Speaking of which, I saw, and this is just to sort of trail us out, because I think we've more than covered the show. Have you noticed, and this was brought to my attention on TikTok, because of course, Rishi Sunak, our current and hopefully soon to be former prime minister, has a habit of just hitting these talking points in a very graceless way in every interview he's ever done. Like, I just watched an interview where he said about every 10 seconds, of course I want to put them on planes. I want to get them on planes. And then someone's like, oh, what's your outlook on the war in Gaza? Well, I hope we can put them on planes.
Maybe we can, I don't know, maybe he wants to send the population of Gaza to Rwanda. I mean, I gather they're recruiting. I don't know. He's like a relatively early AI version of a kind of modern, globalized, successful, relatable leader. But it's very early AI. It's not particularly good. So they picked up that, you know, given the demographics of modern Britain, the fact that his parents are immigrants. But interestingly, and very briefly, not unusually in the Conservative Party, is his parents are from East Africa and his grandparents are from India. So they've come sort of via a second step in the same way that a couple of other senior Conservative politicians, Priti Patel's grandparents were Indian, but her parents were from Uganda. It's a weird kind of sort of double step, if you like. It's not straight from the original source of ethnicity, but I digress. But so they've got that bit of it in the AI. They've got that he went to a very, very posh school as a scholarship boy. They've got that he was head boy, and my God, you can tell. They've got that he went to Oxford. That's great. He then got an MBA at Stanford. Great. So that's that kind of, you know, managerial Americanism thing inserted there. Then he was, you know, he was an analyst at Goldman Sachs. You know, you can see on paper how this AI machine has built him as a politician.
Yeah. No,
and
I
yet
totally
it's just
that.
Not worked in any recognizable sense. And he just doesn't, he has no warmth or rapport with people as far as I can see. I mean, I've not met him in any detail, but you know, when he goes to his constituency, which is in the north of Yorkshire and is very affluent, mainly sort of well-to-do farmers, but it is only fair to point out, massively, massively monocultural. I mean, the last major influx of migration into North Yorkshire was the Normans in the 11th century. I mean, there's just not been anything since then. You know, Richmond is like 96% white, something like that.
Yep.
I mean, he and Akshata must be the ethnic minorities. Largely, he tells the story himself of going round as a candidate with William Hague, who was his predecessor as MP, and one of the farmers was saying, "Oh yeah, really liked Hague. This new fellow looks all right. He's got a better tan than Hague, though." And you think, "Yeah, that'll be the racism." Hello, but
yeah.
he went to North Yorkshire already talking about immigration. You know, he was talking about immigration being a major factor facing Britain when he was still a candidate in 2015. And surely people in Richmond, Yorkshire must have looked at him and thought, we don't know what you're talking about. We don't have any immigrants here. Look around us. I mean, there's so-and-so who's maybe come from the West Riding of Yorkshire. We're a bit suspicious of him because his family only came here 400 years ago. But it's just a weird obsession. But no, he is... everything about the individual components of his background, many of which are not good. And I say that because I'm not wild about people from Winchester.
Elliot, tell them where to find you.
Well, probably the easiest stepping off point is Twitter, or X, as we must now definitely not call it, where I'm at Elliot Wilson 2, ELIOTWILSON 2. And from there, you will find a gateway to a gallimaufry of content, I think it's fair to say.
Let us know any questions you have about British politics. Let's try and keep it to a basic level so that I can keep up, or any advanced questions about the British royals, because that is what royalty is all about. Thank you so much, Elliot. I could talk to you forever, and you know this. Thanks to all of you for listening, especially our new patrons. Thanks to Cousin Dan for producing the show, and Eliza for being our loyal VA. We love you all, and we are so excited to be back. And with that, we will see you soon.
See you next time. Cheerie bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.